What time is it? What day is this? Well, it's July, named after Julius, of the year, the arbitrary year, called the year of our Lord, which it is not, 1998. And next month is going to be August, named after Augustus. That means very splendiferous and proud and bounteous and wonderful. Augustus Caesar. Because Augustus, jealous because of the fact that Julius had 31 days in the month named after him, decided he wanted 31 days in the month named after him, Augustus. So he stole one, although you can't really do that, to move one from February. So now we have leap year every 4 years, 29 days instead of 28. But the month previous to that would have been Juno, the goddess of love. And then there are all these other strange names, and they're misnamed because September should be the 7th, and it's not. It's the 9th. And October should be the 8th, but it's not. It's the 10th. And Nov, which means 11, should be, you know, they're all named wrong. December should be the 10th month. That's what it means, 10th month. It doesn't mean the 12th month. So they're all named wrong. Well, something terrible is going to happen, allegedly. I want to talk about that in a minute. When all of the millions upon millions of little microchips that regulate computer clocks in their tens and twenties and hundreds of millions all over the world, some of them buried in equipment, hundreds of feet beneath the sea in drilling rigs that actually have to do with extracting oil from the seabeds, and I will talk as I go along about this Y2K problem, which is emerging and now gradually beginning to be recognized by the media, and perhaps address what you and I ought to be doing about it. Before I get into that, I'd like to mention that we're going to have the area coordinators in here over the weekend, God willing, of the 14th and 15th of August, and we're going to invite all the other outlying churches. We'll have special church services over at the Sheraton Hotel. The area coordinators and three other invitees, including two board members and who are ministers and also one other gentleman, are going to be in meetings on Sabbath morning from about 8:30 till noon. Then we will break for lunch, and after that we will have services commencing at 3 o'clock, and we will break at about 5 o'clock and come back at 6 o'clock for a catered dinner for the entire church, a sit-down banquet dinner for everyone, and then that evening, an evening of entertainment, hopefully featuring karaoke music. But we'll do the best we can to make it an entertaining church fellowship. That's on the weekend of August 14th and the 15th. You've probably heard by now of Y2K. All Y means is year, 2 is 2, and K is the symbol. It stands for 1,000. So it merely means year 2000, the Y2K syndrome. I've been calling around and talking to a number of people about that. I tried to talk to the FAA. I talked to control towers and approach control at both Longview and Tyler airports. I talked to the FAA over in Dallas. I talked to my banker, to a vice president. Also talked to the man who is the head of the task force to deal with the Y2K problem at Southside Bank. I also talked to the people out at the Southside branch where I trade. And I've talked to the head of TU Electric and the task force spending lots and lots of money dealing with their problems. I would like to relate to you, first of all, what the problem is. And the problem is that back in the 1960s, when all these behemoth-sized mainframe computers were installed in businesses and government agencies, and from the federal government to every agency, of which there are hundreds of the federal government, to the Pentagon, to every hospital in the country with its ICU unit, which is monitoring somebody's heartbeat or the exact amount of intravenous feeding that he's being given, and to people on life support systems, which a friend of mine is right now, that depends upon the monitoring devices which are run on computer chips, to all of the 23 million small businesses in the United States, which represents more than 50% of the labor force. They are all run on computer, and little by little by little we become completely accustomed to a computer doing practically everything for us. To think of it in a day-to-day sense, there are computers probably in your automobile as you're driving along the road to keep track of how much gas you've got and how many miles you're traveling. It's not just an old odometer anymore that is actually a mechanical device, but it's an electronic device. and computers have to do with the locking of your door or the little device that you can press to lock your door after you walk out of the car. When you go to get gasoline for your automobile, if you're like me, I like to stop at a place where I can take out my card, simply insert it, tells you how to insert it, little picture there to put the little strip of tape towards you. Pull your card out quickly, it says. You do that, and you punch what you want. It says, wait a moment, and then it gives you a little beeping sound, and you begin to pump your gas. It's all done by computer. When you go into the store nearby to get your groceries, the scanner that they use to check out all the groceries and tell you how much you owe is done by computer. Practically everything is done by computer nowadays. In this room, I talked to you before about energy. If you think, first of all, of our lights. Well, believe it or not, the electrical company that supplies those lights is run by computer. And those computers are tied into a grid which may be regional and some of which can be national. I think it was probably a year and a half or so ago that a tree fell over some power lines in Idaho and caused a massive power blackout in Los Angeles. It shows you how interconnected some of these computer systems are. So practically everything we depend upon, air conditioning, purchasing groceries, purchasing gasoline, especially our banking, our deposits and our withdrawals, and any investments you might have. And of course you know that people in their millions, small investors, have been putting their money in mutual funds, and all those mutual funds, of course, are kept track of by just so many little electronic digits in computers. And if you purchase X number of shares of stock, they don't send you a lot of beautiful certificates with gold seals on them, but they just put on a computer that you now own X number of shares of IBM or Boeing or Excite or one of the, maybe like AOL or something like that, one of the website or the internet computer stocks, I should say. If you look at your home a little differently for a moment, instead of looking at the some 90 energy slaves available to you in terms of all the electrical devices that you could plug in if you wanted to, from m'lady's hair curler to the iron to an automatic can opener to your oven to your microwave to your freezer and your refrigerator to your freezer out in the garage to the lights to your TV sets to your telephones to your internet on your computer in your home, all of the many energy devices, if you think that all power and all flow of water and all outflow of water and everything simply stopped, what have you got left? Well, you have a wood or a brick and masonry tent. It's far more permanent than a tent, but it no longer has any electricity, no longer has any running water, so it doesn't have any lights, doesn't have any heat, and it doesn't have any air conditioning. Now, unfortunately, in the middle of this terrible heat wave here in Texas, over in Dallas and Fort Worth and in several other cities where there are very elderly people who are on Social Security and some of them on welfare and some with virtually no income at all, there are even some tragic cases where people have died not because they didn't have air conditioning, but because they simply were afraid to turn it on because they couldn't afford the bill. They didn't want to run up their electrical bill, so there are poor black people and whites in Dallas who have been dying in these last weeks, just suffocating and dying of heat exhaustion because it's too hot and they cannot afford or they don't have the means by which to cool their homes. If it's January 1st, 2000, and it happens to be 4 degrees below zero in maybe Akron, Ohio, and suddenly the entire city goes black, because it will happen at exactly midnight, according to some people, that's when January 1st, 2000 begins, how are people going to keep warm? Well, let me just get into this a little bit and tell you what they say is going to happen and give you a few quotes out of a newsletter that I have here, because even Newsweek magazine referred to what is going to happen as the day when the world shuts down. Now, so far, there have been some major news media which have dealt with it, including Newsweek, the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times of London, and the very prestigious Economist of England, and they have said this. These are not the news sources that the vast majority of Americans depend upon, but it's when this story finally becomes a staple on ABC, CBS, NBC, and CNN nightly news broadcasts, and believe me, it will, said the writer of this newsletter, that the inevitable public panic will strike full force. The sudden acceleration of public awareness will see to it. Now let me show you one way in which that could occur. One of the first things we're concerned about to make our way in this world to buy that gas at the service station or to walk out of there with a couple of armloads of groceries, as I did yesterday to the tune of $46 and some odd change, is to have some money, to have the wherewithal to pay people for the goods and the services that we use, to pay sometimes in the summer a massive electrical bill every month, to pay about 3 telephone bills because of the telephone lines that we have to use at our home, and to pay, of course, for all the other services that we have, to pay the utilities company for the water that is right now being rationed. We can only water 2 early mornings in the wee hours per week and can only water on the opposite days from our neighbor across the street, and about half of our lawn is burnt up and is going, and several of the trees on the golf course are already dying and are dead. 2 great big massive tall black gums that are beautiful trees and they're dead, and several of the pines are dying because pines have to have a lot of water. So as I look at the problem and I try to assess it from my own point of view, I would like to be able to survive for the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or a month, or 6 months that it's going to require all of these various agencies, from a government agency to my local utilities company, to solve their problem. Haven't they solved it yet? Haven't they known about it long enough to be able to solve it? Well, yes. Some of them have been working on it since 1993. But what they say about it is that they're not really confident that what they have done so far is going to solve the problem. For example, Arthur Levitt, chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, recently sent an urgent letter to registered investors or investment advisors informing them that they're obligated under the U.S. security laws to begin discussing openly year 2000 issues because they haven't been doing that. Now, why wouldn't securities want to discuss 2000 issues, 2000 year issues with their clients? Why would not you, if you are an investor, a small investor in a mutual fund, and maybe Merrill Lynch is your brokerage firm, have received a call from your broker who says you might want to think about the Y2K problem and how it's going to impact Merrill Lynch? Well, why would he want to cut his own throat? Why would he want to lose a valuable customer because he gets a percentage of every transaction he makes on your behalf? He would scare you so badly if he did that, you would promptly, very likely, say, sell my stocks. Get me out of that mutual fund. Get me out of the money market, the Merrill Lynch cash management account. I want my money in mattress money, in gold or silver or cash, in my home, where I can keep an eye on it. So they don't. And they don't tell you. Well, he went on to say, under U.S. security laws, they've got to begin discussing the year 2000 issues with all of their clients, particularly if they are, quote, not confident that they will be able to perform smoothly, end quote, and there's the catch that lets them off the hook. If you were to tap into this information on the web, and some of you in this room have computers, and many people who will see the program or hear it do, all you've got to do is to check, search the web, and then punch in Y2K, year 2000, and hit a button. It will tell you, if you do that, that there are, I think I wrote it down, something like 6,228,696 pages of information available, of which it gave me the top 10. Gave me the top 10 out of 6,288,28 pages of information in the internet that is there in the form of books from Prentice Hall and other major books. You can go to the bookstore and buy technical books as well as other books on the Y2K problem. Let me go through some of these quotes with you to sort of set the gist of what I want to talk about and to how concerned we ought to be about it as a church, as the Evangelistic Association, and as individuals in our private homes with our concerns about what kind of a bump in the road is this going to be when we come to 2000. Apparently, the SEC has decided to divert the blame to the private sector. After all, they are the ones who are the only reason whose only reason to exist is to protect investors. So what's going to happen when brokers and other investment advisors begin complaining that they're not sure they can solve the problem. Well, it's going to cause a run on the banks. What I don't want to do here with this sermon, I think I'm so small in the terms of the number of people that I could reach that there's no real fear of this sermon causing a collapse of the stock market. But surely many people who are going to hear this tape, including people to whom I advertise it on the television program and people in our mailing list to whom I wrote a letter advertising it, are going to want to think very seriously about the extent to which they are vulnerable and to call the appropriate people, which I have begun to do. I have not yet tracked down Micron, even though I tapped into their website, to ask about the specific serial number on my computer, which has hundreds and hundreds of files, about 10 or 11 major books, dozens of booklets, and hundreds of articles that I don't want to lose. And not all of those are printed out, but they're all backed up. That is, on a floppy disk. So it makes sense to back up everything you've got on an electronic hard drive with the floppy disks and to have them sitting on a shelf where they're not plugged in any electronic device, and then they'll be perfectly all right once you're up and running, or even if you go buy a new computer at some time, which is Y2K compliant, as they say. So I would say that people need to call their local banker and discuss the issue with him. They need to call their local utilities company and ask for their public information officer or the project manager of their Y2K project, and they will have such a person, the chances are. Most of the time, if you call a government agency, you get a runaround. You get about two or three other phones to call, and then finally maybe they're out of town and you are always talking again to a computerized machine and leaving a message on the machine, and they will get back to you. So I'm going to continue to do some of my own private research. I put a call into the governor's office. They weren't there today. But I want to talk to the task force in the state of Texas about everything from prison systems to state government to government agencies. And I want to talk to the FAA because I want to scotch a rumor. It's only a rumor making its way around among all the hundreds and thousands of travel agencies in the United States that allegedly all flights, domestic and foreign, are going to be shut down 5 days either side of January 1st, 2000. If that is so, I don't want to be stranded if I'm somewhere else. And I'm, who knows, I might be somewhere else at that time. I don't know that for sure now, but that's possible. So I want to find out. I want to do a little bit of research on my own. I want to find out, what is this all about? What is going to happen? What will it mean to me? What will it mean to the church? What will it mean to the Evangelistic Association, to the bank accounts that we have with Southside Bank, and will they be secure? That, to me, is just common sense. Now, I'm not Chicken Little, but when I come to it a little later on, and what I want to talk to you about, I think I'll give you some practical advice about some very simple little things you might want to think about as we approach that time. All right, let me give you a few quotations here that I think will set the case. Citicorp recently publicly criticized that the vast majority of its telephone and other telecommunications service suppliers have, quote, no common millennium compliance definition, no consistent way of achieving compliance, meaning bringing all their computers into compliance with the 2000 syndrome, have started too late to achieve compliance, have provided nebulous, misleading, and incorrect information in regards to compliance, and have been unaware of the totality and extent of the vital changes that need to be made, end quote. Now, analysts obviously pick up on that. Citicorp is one of the huge banks back in New York. And what if Citicorp's telecommunication systems go down? Well, Citicorp goes down. And Citicorp is absolutely huge. And if 1% or 2% of the financial industry in the United States goes down, the ripple effect, the domino effect in global markets all around the world is going to create havoc. And the problem is that we in the United States are much further along in many of these big, huge corporations like IBM or Citicorp or Chase Manhattan Bank than they are in Russia. And those ancient old mid-60s mainframe computers that had only two digits that would recognize 99, but there's another little joker in that deck I'll tell you about for a moment, about what happens next year. Or another thing which I want to tell you about, what happens because they calculate it on the fiscal year and not the calendar year, what happens maybe midsummer 1998 when computers suddenly come up with the digit 99? Hang on to your hats, I'll tell you in a little while. But here's what will happen when all of those old mainframe 60s computers come up with double digit 0, 0, 0. They will think it is 1900. And they will suddenly start spitting out records from 1900 onward and counting on up to 1999 again. And they won't know that it's 2000. Now, that has to do with census, when it has to do with government figures, when it has to do with Social Security, when it has to do with birth dates, when it has to do with everything from driver's licenses to your Social Security check, the computers can go haywire and you can suddenly be receiving all kinds of crazy stuff, like the 104-year-old woman who received a notice the other day that she needed to go check into kindergarten. It happened. It actually happened. The computer, because she was so old, recognized the date, went back and said that she was now 5 years old, and it didn't know. U.S. Comptroller of the Currency Eugene Ludwig recently warned that the Y2K problem is, quote, more serious than we had imagined, end quote, and further stated banks and financial firms who have not yet developed a compliancy plan, quote, may find that help is unavailable at any price, end quote. Ludwig concluded by saying that even among the larger banks, where the problem seems to be well understood, the steps being taken to meet it were often found to be inadequate. Reuters News Service recently reported that if only 5 to 10% of the world's bank systems do not work on January 1st, 2000, it will create a global liquidity lockup, end quote. Reuters News Service is not some little fly-by-night outfit. It's one of the biggest multinational major news services. We've used it for years on television and so on in the world. When they say that if only 5 to 10% of them do not work on January 1st, it will cause a complete global liquidity lockup, meaning all the markets, all the gold, all the silver, M2, M3, the money supply, foreign exchange, everything else just shuts down on that day because of the ripple effect throughout all the other systems, then I think we should take it seriously. What that really means is the entire world banking system will completely collapse if even a fraction of the banking payment systems fail. Let me give you another couple of quotes, and I by no means am giving you all of them, but maybe just some of the most important. A recent survey of the U.S. public utilities companies revealed that fully one-third of the nation's utilities had not even started to correct their Y2K problem, and another third are severely behind. All utilities depend upon computers for the generation, distribution, and transmission of their respective capabilities, such as electricity, water, and natural gas. According to former State Representative Porter Davis, Republican from Oklahoma City, most authorities now expect fully 20%, one-fifth, of all public utilities in the United States to fail. Doesn't mean they'll fail where we live or where you live. But if they fail in Los Angeles, what happens? If Los Angeles were to experience a sudden blackout, a complete power loss, 911 wouldn't work. The fire department computers and phones and lights and so on wouldn't work. The police department scanners, computers, radios and phones and all the rest wouldn't work. And it'd be a complete blackout and no lights and no street lights. And when it happens, people that are halfway up a high-rise building, and many of them might be around at that time of the night, who knows, will be stuck halfway up in the elevator. Subways, as happened in New York City one time when we were there during a power outage and a blackout, stop right where they are because they run on electricity. There were about 40 aircraft coming into LaGuardia and to John F. Kennedy Airport. And they're stacked up, and I've flown for many years, so I know, at 1,000 or 2,000 feet apart, some of them in a holding pattern out over the Atlantic Ocean waiting for final approach. Some of them wide-body jets with 200 and 300 people aboard, coming right in, seeing what they call the rabbit, the strobe effect on the ILS landing system, and seeing all the runway lights and lights down there and cars going around. All of a sudden, the entire city disappeared. Airport disappeared. Everything disappeared. They had all of their onboard electronic equipment. The lights were still going, and the clicking, counting down on their elevation, their altitude, and how far they were from the airport, that worked fine. But they couldn't see the runway, and they couldn't see the landing lights, and they couldn't communicate with the tower. So all everybody could do was just fly around and try to pick a spot and orbit around and hope they didn't run into each other. And when that happened, and it did happen several years ago in the 60s, thankfully they didn't run into each other, but there were aircraft all over the skies not knowing where to go. Could have been a terrible disaster. What has been pointed out to me by one individual that I talked to is that tremendous riots could occur in Los Angeles because it will be a time when certain elements in society, and we only have a real thin veneer of culture and of respectability and of lawfulness in society, which can be peeled away very quickly in the event of any kind of a catastrophe. I mean, if people will go and loot when an airplane crashes and rob the bodies, then they certainly will loot when they think the police are hamstrung and can't do a thing about it, and will be out saying it's time for me to get a brand new VCR, although I don't know where they're going to plug it in, how they're going to run it, but people say it's time for me to go get a television set. So we were discussing that with one of the gentlemen I talked to, and trying to do some of my own research on this. Reuters news service recently quoted oil industry experts as warning that the Y2K problem could shut down North Sea oil platforms and paralyze the oil industry of Britain if date-sensitive embedded chips used in the platforms are not checked and replaced. Unfortunately, many of these microprocessor chips are deep below sea level. According to Reuters, the problem is that a single offshore oil platform may contain over 10,000 of these date-sensitive chips, and there's little chance all of them can be found. David Trim of Shell Oil's Year 2000 team, and they have teams in all these big industries like that that have actually been put together. IBM has already spent something between $75 and $85 million as their team is trying to assess their problem, for example, and to try to solve it. So David Trim of Shell Oil's Year 2000 team warns that a worldwide commercial meltdown is a real risk. We're talking about something akin to the aftermath of war, he told Reuters. What's going to happen when the conventional news media begin reporting these facts to the American public? As one observer states, it will take only 72 hours for frightened consumers to strip supermarket shelves bare. Jittery investors will pull completely out of the market. Wall Street will be in turmoil, and panic will spill over to every industrialized country on Earth. That could mean that these people will write, in a sense, a self-fulfilling prophecy, and I don't want to contribute to that, but I do want to tell you that further research in these last couple, 3 weeks since I wrote that article appearing in the newspaper has convinced me, especially in talking to bankers and the heads of utility companies, that the problem is more critical than I had earlier thought. It is not an easy little thing that's simply going to come and go. Let me put it to you this way. When I talked to a banker who was willing to talk to me about the potential in their bank, he explained to me how banks work, and I had a pretty good idea, but he put it this way. There are three real elements in a bank that they've got to deal with on a daily basis. When they open their doors, that's element one. That's when the throngs of people are coming in and going back out to sit down with the vice president, talk about a loan for an automobile, or to go in to make a deposit or a withdrawal with a teller at the window. That's only a small fraction of what banks do. The second is in their internal bookkeeping department, all their internal records that they're required to keep, and every bit of it is computerized. All of these ladies and people that are sitting there with the computers keeping track of all the bank's own records internally do it on computer after the people have been finally locked out, the doors are closed, the tellers get there early and they stay late. It's only for a few hours that the people are allowed in there to do their business. But the main way in which they do their business is their borrowings from the Fed, the IMF or central banks, and their lendings to all of their customers. For example, if our bank here in Tyler, with which we deal, and they are very optimistic that they've got much of their problem in hand, but here was the caution he gave me. If they're dealing with some very large businesses, and there are some big businesses in Tyler, there's Kelly Springfield, there are those that make refrigerators and appliances, there are people that have multi-million dollar payrolls. There are builders and suppliers and so on. So if a builder is in a business of maybe making a lot of apartment complexes or a couple of shopping centers or about 47 brand new 6-7 room homes, he is a borrower from that bank. But he is dealing with all kinds of subcontractors. and every one of them, from bricklayers to framers to roofers to cement finishers to people that move the dirt and prepare the pad and so on, are small businessmen, among the 23 million small businessmen who probably run their businesses with a PC and with its various redundant components, with people that can sit there, so that a PC today will be able to do just about what a large mainframe IBM computer could do in the 1960s. If every one of those fellows has a cash flow, which they will in order to survive and in order to look good from the credit union, to borrow the money that they have to draw down on a constant, probably they don't have the money in the bank, but they have a credit line, a line of credit with the bank that they can draw down to pay their people as they need to. Each one of these subcontractors is a little business, and each one of them have other people they've got to pay. Now, along that line, it's like drawing a circle, and here's the bank, drawing a bunch of circles out in all directions, and there are all of these various businesses with which they deal. Each one of those circles has little lines going out to hundreds of other circles, including the people that they pay, the people that they owe, and the people that they borrow from, and so on. If every one of those all down the line have their balance sheets that say accounts receivable safe, backed up, and they know exactly who they owe and who owes them, and they think they can get a hold of all that money, that's fine. There won't be any problem. But if all of a sudden, even though the bank in its internal computer systems and all of its records is going to go right on through the 2000 unscathed, but a lot of their major borrowers can't pay them and don't even know how to find the money that is owed to them, and suddenly the bank is losing millions or tens of millions overnight, the money is just gone from the records, there's not a whole lot they can do about it. This was told me, confided in me, by a man who is very high up in the banking industry. So it is something to think about. Now, you ask, why would these computers have a problem with it one way or another? Because everything they do is date sensitive. Let me give you an illustration by way of reading you some good positive information. This came just yesterday. I printed it out from Chris Cumming. Subject: Thursday report for 23 July. Thursday, 23 July. Right below that date, 09/07/23/18/23/21. So at 18 on a 24-hour clock, 23 minutes and 21 seconds EDT. Wow. Thursday report, 23 July, 09/07/23, and all that, two lines, nothing but dates and time on a computer. From Sunshiner at WorldNet, at Net, Chris Cumming. Copy to Allison Bill Jesswine. File, Thursday, minimum, so many bytes. Time, 26400 bytes per second, 2 minutes. There's that time again. Then there's a little line. This message is a multi-part MIME message and will be saved with a default file name Thursday, MIM. Thursday report for 23 July. There's that date again. Here are the figures for the last week. Here's the good part. Notice the dates. 16 July, they had on the website 154 visitors. On the 17th of July, 169. The 18th of July, 198. On the 19th of July, last Sunday, 221 visitors, the best Sunday ever at the website. 20th of July, on Monday, 155 visitors. 21st of July, Tuesday, last Tuesday, 175. And 22nd of July, on Wednesday, 184 visitors. Total, 1,256 visitors, and then he has a lot of commentary here. And toward the end of it, at the very last part of this, here are all the headers and the computer information that comes along that you don't even look at. You just tear up and throw away. Most of you don't even look at it. Return path, receive from, relay, and then it gives the time. 23 July, 18, 23, and 20 seconds. Receive from, and then there's another line with a lot of dates and time on it. Then another one, ESMTP, received Thursday, 23 July, 1998, 18:22:00, 0400 Eastern Daylight Time. Received from WorldNet, AtNet, 12:65:80, 1:33. There must be 16 lines on this thing that have dates and times on it, on a simple email that came to me for me to read and print out and bring here to you to report to you. So all of these computers are date sensitive. Now, what they haven't told you is that the 99 was a symbol built in to the computers back in the 1960s by short-sightedness by computer designers and programmers at that time, who never remotely expected to be using those antiquated old mainframes for more than another 10 years, thought that the technology is growing and developing so rapidly that logically all of this will be changed out. And of course, a lot of times, a lot of it has been. But it hasn't been in much of Russia, and it hasn't been in Bulgaria and Hungary and Lithuania, and it hasn't been in Eastern Germany, and it hasn't been in Yugoslavia, in all of Eastern Europe, in much of Asia, in practically any of Central or South America, and that means nations like Brazil and Bolivia and Argentina, and they are very large in the worldwide financial or global financial picture. And some of the European countries are way behind the United States in it, and some of our companies, and very large ones at that, are way behind other companies. So there is no straight across the board replacement of older equipment that just happens when the newer equipment is available. People tend to keep what they have. They don't want to spend the money. And decades can go by where they've still got these monstrous mainframes that would fill this room in large businesses that keep track of millions of dollars and tens of thousands of employees. So most of it is not up to speed. And what they had built into those computers is that when a computer sees a digit, 99, it stops. It freezes up because it is a fault. It is a signal deliberately built in. Uh-oh, something's wrong, and the computer is supposed to shut down. So a lot of this isn't going to happen on the precise second at the Greenwich Meridian, Greenwich Mean Time in Greenwich, England, at the 1st of January, 2000. But it's going to happen on December 31st, 1998, in those computers that suddenly see 99. But it's going to happen even earlier than that in a lot of businesses, including some major government agencies, because they deal with a fiscal year, not with a calendar year. And they go from June to June, don't they? And not from December to December. Now, let's come down to what you and I might be concerned about personally and what we ought to do about it. Maybe you wouldn't want to put the bank first, but a lot of people will just automatically. I would call my bank. I already have, on behalf of the church. I haven't done anything about my own personal banking account at all with Merrill Lynch yet, but I intend to. But I called the bank, and I sat down and talked with them about, are they compliant? They assured me they are. The bank account for the Church of God, is the Intercontinental Church of God, is going to be fine. The bank account for the Evangelistic Association is going to be fine. They've got adequate backup. You know, they have little zip drives now that you can put in a PC that I believe have the capacity of 100 of the regular little floppy disks, little disks that you think are not as a floppy, but they're in a little hard case, but they're a little floppy disk about that big. And a zip drive that's a little larger and heavier has a capacity of 100 of those, and those had a giant capacity. We could actually put on one zip drive a mailing list five times as big as the one that we ever had at CGI, and no problem at all. So probably hundreds of thousands of names, and just put it in your pocket. That's the capability of some of these microchips. So the banks will back up that material, and there may be some rough going for a while, and there may be a few days or a week or two where people will have some difficulty. I believe there will be some major cities that will have some power outages. There will be some rural areas that will probably have some troubles with electric power and with natural gas. There will be some people that need to pay attention to that and to ask the questions in advance and find out what to do. Well, I would call my bank and find out. I would call, if I'm a small investor and I have a mutual fund or if I have some stocks, I would call the appropriate people, and don't always just take for gospel what your broker, who makes his living on the transactions he makes for you, to tell you exactly what's what. You might need to go over his head or around behind him without him knowing to the headquarters of the organization and try to get in touch with the task force that has been tasked with making all of their computers Y2K compliant, as they say. I would do like I have done and call the electrical company. If you have gas in your home and you live in Ohio or northern Michigan or up in Canada, and we're talking about January of 2000, aren't we? So we're talking about the winter, and you'd want to think about that. you might want to find out how far are they along in becoming Y2K compliant. Can they reassure you that everything is going to flow as normal? You'll have electricity, you'll have water, you'll have gas. And if there's no problem, then don't worry about it. You might also want to check with the local sheriff or police department and find out what they are doing with regard to security at that time. I will try to run down the rumor, I tried a little late so I couldn't get them over the weekend, that various states' governors are already deciding that they are going to call out the National Guard by the day or two just before the 2000 date to try to have them in place to prevent any kind of looting or rioting or something like that. I'd like to run down that rumor and find out, is it true? But it's a rumor that's making its way around, so I'll try to run that down and deal with it. First of all, I don't think anyone ought to hoard food or water, but I do think it makes sense when you think about the fact that your refrigerator is like a small little supermarket and your freezer, and most American refrigerators and freezers will have food that will last them for about a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. Some of the staples may be longer, but a lot of times the perishables, milk, bread, and eggs, how many times do we say it? We need to get milk, bread, and eggs, our breakfast stuff, and so on. And some of the perishables that don't last very long. So we don't lay those in great store. But things like dried beans and flour and grains and things of that nature that can provide staple food, or potatoes that don't spoil all that rapidly and so on, wouldn't be a bad idea to have a 2 or 3 week supply of some foods on hand. But certainly you don't need to go hoarding food or act like the world's going to come to an end like some people are claiming, because that's not going to happen. I think most people, I think the majority of most people in the United States won't even see a bit of difference between December 31st, 1999 and January 1st, 2000, except what they watch happening on their television sets from England or something. That's the only thing they're going to notice if the television set works. But I mean, other than that, there won't be any problem. I think if you take a very rational and a very cautiously optimistic approach to this, that both we as an organization and you as an individual will go sailing right through it with no problem at all. Now, first of all, there is no cosmic force. There is no prophetic significance. There is nothing at all in the Bible. There is nothing on its way from heaven. There's nothing happening around God's throne that is of any significance at all on January 1st, 2000. 2000 is utterly artificial. Dionysius the Little didn't know what he was doing, and he didn't know when Christ was born. And when they established many, many years after the fact, the year of our Lord, Anno Domini, and the year before Christ, B.C., they were already 4 years off. And actual chronology has proven that Jesus Christ was born 4 B.C. on approximately the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles in the month of September, and not at the beginning of the date A.D., Anno Domini, or the year of our Lord. Not true. Furthermore, the Jews have a different calendar than we do. And their calendar is from creation, and their calendar doesn't say that we're going to arrive at the 6,000th year until a couple of years later, when it will be at the 6,000th year, the way they are counting time, if they are accurate. Further, major segments of the population of the world are Islamic, and they have a completely different calendar from the Jews. The Chinese have a different calendar, as do most other Orientals. And many of the animists and other people, Confucianists and so on, have a different calendar. So large numbers, maybe probably more than half of the world's population, are operating on a completely different calendar than the people in the Western English-speaking world. But here's what's going to happen. It's already beginning to happen because of some harebrained fools and not a small handful of idiots. There are people who have already bought, and some people have already used, one-way tickets to Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem is already having to cope with the year 2000 factor. Those people are gathering on and about the environs of the Mount of Olives because they expect the second coming of Christ at the precise instant of the beginning of the year 2000. Stupid beyond belief. It's not going to happen. It isn't true. It's dumb. One-way tickets. All right. Remember Kahootek? It was so gorgeous, and we went out and looked at it. I took my 10 powers and I went out, and my wife and I would look at that thing day after day and night after night. Remember the people in San Diego decided to go up and join it? That isn't where they went, of course. They went to the morgue, and from there they went to little boxes and got put 6 feet under the soil, and that's where they are right now today. But there was some harebrained idiot who had some kind of demonic leadership of some kind that had those people convinced that there was some kind of a mothership following after this comet going across the skies, and they were going to go up there and join it. And so they decided to put plastic over their faces and lie down, put their shoes neatly there beside them and fold their hands and just not breathe anymore. I don't know how in the world they did it. I guess it took a lot of sedatives to force themselves to lie there and die. But they committed mass suicide. I am now going to predict, because I know the idiocy and the stupidity and the religious fanaticism of some quarks in this world that are so, you know, out of it mentally that there's no fathoming what goes on in their demented little brains, that probably here and there, not just in one isolated instance, there are going to be some people who will commit mass suicide as the clock ticks down to the beginning of the next, you know, millennium, as they say. Too bad, but I imagine that's what some people are going to do. So I do not believe that there is anything at all that is remotely significant about Y2K or the year 2000. It is utterly artificial. It is the Gregorian calendar. It is not accurate. God does not begin the days at midnight. God does not begin the years in the dead winter on January 1st or at the end of December 31st, but he begins them in the spring on Abib or Nisan the first, when the green grass and the roots and the herbs and the trees and the foliage and the plants and the edibles are beginning to come forth out of the ground. So there is no cosmic force. There is nothing from God. There is nothing in prophecy about the year 2000 at all. But you can rest assured that what I'm telling you is very likely going to happen to some degree. There will be some problems in some of the big inner urban areas. There will be some problems in the Pentagon. There will be problems in other military and government agencies and organizations all over the world. Believe it or not, literally, here and there, governments could collapse. But in one way, you can say, so what, depending upon which government you're talking about. Of a certain grave concern of mine, there's nothing I can do about it, is the fact that there are tens of thousands of missiles in tens of thousands of silos. And there are missiles with IRBM and ICBM warheads with multiple independently targetable reentry vehicles, or MIRVs, in them in nuclear submarines. And every one of those are programmed on computers that are whirring and humming and clicking away and counting down. And they have aiming points that are fed, and continually we argue about whether or not, when President Clinton went to China, he talked the Chinese into retargeting their ICBMs. We found out that Clinton lied when he said, I can tell you tonight, not a single ballistic missile is targeted at a single American child, when in fact all kinds of Chinese ICBMs were targeted at American cities all the way across the United States, with the conceivable exception of South Florida. And that includes Dallas-Fort Worth. And so you saw it in the news on CNN. They were making a great deal of political hay over the fact that Clinton apparently got a concession out of the Chinese government to retarget their guidance systems. Well, everybody knows they can be retargeted again in exactly 45 minutes. So that's rather a hollow gesture, but it had political value, and so he went ahead and did it. But what you worry about, in a way, but what can we do? So why worry? Is what if there were a misfire? What if there were some of those silos that got triggered accidentally? What if some of them simply didn't work or broke down or whatever? And I know that that has been voiced. I know there are publications that do voice that. It is voiced by some of the information you can get on the internet as to whether or not some of the defense systems in different countries are going to simply come to a screeching halt and break down entirely at that time. I would imagine that the hysteria that you can read in some of these news reports that look for the breakdown virtually of all central government all over the world, and martial law imposed practically everywhere, and military dictatorships just springing up everywhere, and people taking to the streets and rioting everywhere, is not going to happen. But there are going to be pockets here and there. I look for Eastern Europe. probably Korea, maybe somewhere in the periphery of Southeast Asia. It's a little concern of Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India, maybe in Iran and other places, where these people are nowhere near up to speed as we are in the United States, that there could be problems that are going to be felt, and we'll know about them in the days and the weeks after January 1st, 2000. But so far as you and I are concerned, and so far as the church and the Evangelistic Association is concerned, I don't think we're going to feel much more than a little tiny bump in the road, and all will be well. Now, finally, I'd like to turn to Matthew, the 24th chapter, and refresh our memory. Because Jesus Christ did not say that there is some magical chronology that we're to watch for, or some specific date that we are to watch for, but he said that there are two major events that we are to watch for. If some of man's machinery, which is fallible and can break down, results in wars, which it can, there have been wars that have been started by accident. There have been wars of miscalculation. There have been riots and things like that that have been started because the power went out. So if some of the events that are to impact the world are actually started by some of the machinery of man breaking down and triggering that event, the event is what is important, not necessarily what triggered it or how it happened. We're all familiar with the 24th chapter of Matthew, beginning in verse 15. When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, parenthesis, Matthew added, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. And there are people already who are fleeing from the United States to Judea and doing it in reverse, which is really stupid. Should not do that at all. What is the abomination? It is something ugly, abominable, detestable, despicable in God's sight. It should not read the abomination of desolation, but the abomination that brings about or results in desolation, desecration, destruction. The history books tell us, Kiddo's Cyclopedia, Hastings Bible Dictionary, and so on, that the abomination of desolation was fulfilled in part by Antiochus Epiphanes, who actually sacrificed swine's blood on the altar in the holy place in the temple, and set up a statue of Jupiter Olympus, and they sacrificed to Jupiter Olympus. And then, of course, later on, at the destruction of the temple in 71 A.D., when the Roman standards were set there, which were pagan idols to which the Roman soldiers gave homage, and so that this has been fulfilled in the past. We have always thought, and I still do think, that either a temple is going to be built, or some kind of a temporary structure over a dedicated cornerstone, and that sacrifices will begin. It is conceivable that sacrifices could begin before the completion of a temple. I just read once again in a letter just the other day, the same old fable, that there is a temple already prefabricated, ready to be put up in only about a week's time. Nonsense. There was an article that was supposed to be published in the Plain Truth magazine back in the early 1970s about that very idea, and these beautiful slabs of marble were supposed to be numbered and all ready to be put together. They were actually on the dock over in Baltimore. I sent Lyle Christofferson to Baltimore. No slabs of marble. I called the people that were supposed to be doing this. They'd never heard of what you're talking about. Just like I called a guy called Henry Hill that claimed to have discovered in a computer Joshua's Long Day. No such thing. Never happened. The people that at the university that were supposed to be there where he did the research didn't know what they were talking about. Some guy just made it up out of whole cloth and put it out in a newsletter and other people swallowed it. No, you don't build temples by prefabrication. A temple would be built by some of the most absolutely beautiful and heavy stonework by masons, putting them in place very, very slowly over a pretty significantly long period of time. Now, the abomination of desolation, because it is to stand in the holy place, we've always believed that will be a temple. And there is a movement afoot, not just by one organization, but by several, to build a temple. And I cover a little bit more about that red heifer that I had mentioned earlier on, a year and a half or so ago, in a current article, which is in our Intercontinental News, because when that red heifer appeared, They thought maybe this is a fulfillment of prophecy, and it's interesting at least to note that the red heifer will be the required 3 years old by 2000, at which time it will be available for sacrifice. Will they sacrifice it in a temple? Will a temple be there by that time? All you've got to do is to imagine what would happen now that Pakistan has the bomb and Pakistan is an Islamic country, now that Iran is actually testing its missiles and has test-fired missiles that can reach Israel and Saudi Arabia within the last few days, now that Syria has silkworm missiles supplied from China, and now that nations that are very antagonistic toward Israel all around Israel have the wherewithal to sit right there in their own homeland and to fire missiles on Israel that could carry anthrax, chemical, biological, and or possibly nuclear weapons, that if the Jews were to dynamite or bulldoze down those two mosques, there would be, that event would unite the Arab and Islamic countries against the Jews as never before. If we see those things happening, then I think we as God's people should realize that the time is getting very near. And what do we do about it? Fill our bathtub with water? Hoard food? Save seeds? Get on a ship and go to Petra? No. You know what Christ says to do? Lift up your heads, for you know your redemption draweth nigh. He says, be not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Those that endure to the end shall deliver their souls, the Bible says. All you've got to do is keep doing what you need to do. Because God says that when Christ comes, he will reward those whom he finds so doing. Not people hiding somewhere or running off or hoarding something or trying to think about saving their skin, but wondering instead, what does God want them to do with the rest of their lives and the time that does remain? The second part of that prophecy is in the book of Luke, the 21st chapter, when you see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, and once again I refer you to Daniel 11, 40-45, that says when a king of the south, we don't know who that is yet, it could be Mubarak, could be somebody else of Saudi Arabia or Egypt, pushes at a king of the north. We don't know who that is yet. The king of the north comes with great fury to utterly take away many and occupies Palestine. And the language of Matthew 24, let him that is in the house or in the field not come back to take his clothes. Let him as on the housetop not take anything out of his house. Seems to be a sudden takeover, not the advance warning that an advancing army is coming and you've got a week or 10 days or 2 weeks to prepare, but something that is so imminent that you only have minutes to prepare for it. And it seems to be like the occupying army is already in place, but suddenly something different occurs. A tank rumbles around the corner. An armored car laden with troops goes by below, and you're up on the house hanging out your washing if you're in Jerusalem. You'd better go by the road of the roofs, down to the street, and just quietly walk out of the city, said Christ. Don't go back to take anything out of the house, because that is when it all comes down. That's in Jerusalem, in Judea. It's not in Poughkeepsie or Akron or Dayton or Tyler, Texas or Quilcene, Washington. It is over in Judea. So we will look for those events to occur, and instead of running off somewhere like Chicken Little saying the sky is falling, we will just have hope to know that we're just that much closer to the beginning of the kingdom of God. Don't worry about Y2K. Just do what you need to do in your own home within reasonable caution and with reasonable common sense, and don't get all frightened about it and hysterical and do something you shouldn't.